Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. And before I introduce this guest, I want to start off with a question like this. What would be your Mount Everest of trophy walleye destination trips? For me, I think about going somewhere super remote, driving until there's no gas left in the tank, north, somewhere in Canada, very remote, big bodies of water, just testing every single ounce of your skill as a fisherman, mentally and physically, and just putting everything to the test. Something that would take years in the making for planning, getting your most hardcore fishing buddies put together, and going up on just a banger trip. That's what we're going to talk about in this show. Our guest is Jason Hamilton. Jason is a Saskatchewan resident right now. He lives along Tobin Lake up on the Saskatchewan River. And Jason has a very fun and unique career in the fishing industry. His experiences are pretty unbelievable. I think so many of us, you know, Jason's day-to-day lifestyle up in Canada and the type of fishing that he does is, you know, so many of us would consider, you know, maybe just a once-in-a-lifetime epic bucket list trip. And this is what Jason has done for so many years of his career. All the places that he's been. So we're going to spend some time catching up and learning a little bit about Jason Hamilton himself. And Jason is going to lay down some foundational information as to what it takes to be successful on one of these types of trips. If you are that type of person that has that kind of adventure and fire inside of you, that someday you're going to head up somewhere super remote, somewhere very, very adventurous and memorable. Yeah, you know, it's the type of place that is really going to take a lot out of you, and you're going to risk it all for the chance to hoist, you know, just an unbelievable sized fish in an unbelievable place, and just really take it all in. That's what we're going to talk about on this trip, on this show. Super excited! This is one of my favorite of all time interviews to bring to you, and you know, Jason is just a first class individual. Won't be the last time that we hear from him. Let's get into this interview. We're talking epic trophy walleye fishing adventures with Jason Hamilton. This is your first time on, so you know, I just wanted us to kind of catch up a little bit on the air, kind of on the record. And you know, I definitely you know, to start at the beginning, even I want to hear what you've been up to lately, but I need you to kind of go back and talk a little bit about yourself and your fishing career and just kind of where you cut your teeth, where you're from, you know, where some of your, you know, original or home bodies of water have been throughout your fishing career, and just kind of, you know, give us a chance to kind of get caught up a little bit.
Well, my name is Jason Hamilton. Right now I live by Tobin Lake in Saskatchewan. I grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, which is right where Lake Superior and Lake Huron meet. So it was a really cool place to grow up as a kid. We had the Great Lakes fisheries with the, you know, the stocked steelhead and salmon. And we also had, you know, lake trout, brook trout, and bass and walleye. So it was kind of a cool place to grow up, and was lucky enough to have a dad that carted me out fishing from a real young age. And we started perch fishing and steelhead fishing and bass fishing and basically all what we could read in the magazines. And we started targeting at that time. And I took a job out in Winnipeg when I finished college. And that got me kind of thrust into the walleye fishing more. You know, there's less brook trout, less steelhead, and more walleye. And it was just about that time in 2008, 2009, when the Lake Winnipeg fishery was really taking off. And, you know, it was a sort of one of the earlier runs of that becoming popular, and got involved and spent a lot of time fishing, learned that lake a lot, and started guiding there. But before that, I'd spent some time guiding in the Northwest Territories on Great Slave Lake. And my first guiding job was in Northwest Ontario at a lake called Stormer Lake, north of Red Lake. And went away from the guiding, worked as a government biologist for a number of years, and through a chance meeting got hooked up with a group called Scott Lake Lodge. And I've been there for 12 years now, and really enjoying that up in the northern part of Saskatchewan, Northwest Territories. Fishing for pike and trout and grayling. And that's brought me because of work being based in Saskatchewan, it was time to move further west. And here I am at Tobin Lake, still chasing big walleyes and working summers running Scott Lake Lodge.
Man, I mean, obviously there's probably like two or three days worth of conversation in details that are left out in that. I mean, we're talking huge jumps. I mean, what would you say, you know, is your passion in all this fishing? I mean, you've targeted, you know, you've been in all these places that are all so different from each other, and you've done fish. You've probably picked up all kinds of, you know, just fishing, just fishy stuff at each and every juncture in your life. Like, speak on that a little bit. I mean, you know, your passion for fishing. I mean, what was your favorite? What would be some of your favorite memories looking back on your career now? What were just some of the, you know, the big impressions that were made on you in some of those places looking back?
Well, you know, the biggest thing growing up was the Great Lakes steelhead. That's what my dad loved to chase after in the spring and fall and winter. And, you know, the techniques that he had weren't float fishing. That was bottom bouncing or, you know, dead drifting spawn sacks and things like that. As a youngster, that was one of the hardest things to, you know, we caught a bunch of perch and set the hook and things like that before. But I think it took me three springs of really steelhead fishing hard when I was, you know, 10 to 12 years old, somewhere in there, before I caught my first one. And that was like the biggest deal. And it was the first time I really felt like I had to become a student of fishing and learn a technique and learn why the fish were there, what they were doing, when they were there, and, you know, the feel of how to catch them. That was a big step. And it was a challenge that I think brought me into guiding. You know, the ability to go to a lake and try and figure it out quickly, make some right decisions. And I've been lucky enough through my own fishing. I went pretty hard at it for a lot of years. I set the hook enough that I was happy sharing it with other people at a fairly young age and seeing people catch fish and the success that they were having and the memories they were making was just as rewarding as setting the hook yourself. And I mean, everybody says that's kind of a corny line, but I still like to catch big fish and fish, but it's really been a fun ride to learn the teaching part of it and explain what's in your head to people that might be very new to fishing and then want that, you know, experience and success.
What a story, you know, being a young man, you know, and from the sounds of it, your dad was probably your biggest mentor when you were young, and you can speak on that. But, you know, for so many people around that age, you know, young people that would be exposed to fishing, if they had to accept the challenge of landing a steelhead, you know, to be their first, you know, big fishing experience, you know, there's so many people have to go through so many other fishing experiences and challenges before they even target steelhead, you know, on their own later in life. I mean, that is just, that is something else. Yeah, kudos to you, man. And so we're here now.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I think a lot of it was just at a time when I didn't understand much better. You know, you're reading some magazines and Fisherman and some Canadian magazines and Bassmaster. So you didn't really know what success looked like. You know, now I think young folks come in and see the highlight reel on YouTube of people, you know, just yarding and fish and setting the hook on some great looking fish. And maybe they get discouraged a bit that, you know, if you're not having that immediate success, you know, to keep motivated to learn and figure out why, you know, why and how you can get there.
You know, the big topic for this conversation, you know, now that we're getting to know you better, is I want to have you kind of be the first guy on this show after, you know, 100 plus episodes to really talk about breaking down the big unknown. You know, for so many people here in the Midwest where we're at, where I'm at, you know, the final frontier of ice fishing opportunities is somewhere up, you know, in those Canadian provinces, you know, somewhere where you go, you know, kind of beyond where good lake mapping is. And, you know, you drive your vehicle, you know, far enough that you're kind of worried about where the next gas station is. You get up there and there's just a different mentality of fishing, and there's a different, you know, decision making. There's a process to breaking down this big water, and it takes time. And I really want to kind of dig into the big hot topics of breaking down the big water. You know, you talk about, you know, living near Lake Tobin. You know, gosh, what a destination fishery. You're talking about, you know, being, you know, Lake Winnipeg. You know, I mean, that's a big body of water. I mean, even that, to an extent, that's pretty popular now. There's probably, you know, a lot of that stuff's kind of been nuanced or whatever. But I mean, you know, when you were there, you were there early. I mean, you were there breaking it down, looking at the big windy, you know. So here I'm kind of over explaining it, but I just kind of want to lay down that topic for you. And I kind of want to just cut you loose on it. You know, what are some of the main topics that, you know, for somebody that, you know, is adventurous, they've probably got a handful of really solid destination DIY fishing experiences under their belt, but they've never really been up in those just the big varsity level, you know, the Tobins of the world, you know, Great Slave. You know, you're talking about just some of these you know, epic Canadian final frontier fisheries. Talk about breaking it down. And the only thing I'm going to tell you that is going to narrow this down for you so that we can fit some of these topics in is that I want to try to stay on, you know, walleyes, trophy walleyes. That's one of the most top popular topics there. I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, that's probably easy for me to say, but if we can speak to the walleyes, I kind of want to just cut you loose on that and just say, give me the tutorial. Like I am that guy I just described, you know, I'm getting ready,
sure,
you know, to get after it. So, you know, just sort of the main things to consider before you go there, but also I'm going to ask you some questions, you know, some details, some technical information, some real, like, when you're on the water, what are you looking for specifically when you're trying to find that upper echelon, that bigger class of fish?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we'll start off with the, I guess, maybe not the obvious thing, but the first part of it is, while ice fishing is a great sport where you can get out and get involved for a relatively low cost input, these sorts of trips are not the place that you want to go without being sufficiently geared. And I think there's enough resources out there, and we can talk a bit about that. Having quality functioning truck, trailer, snowmobile, UTV. I can't speak too much to snow bears. I don't have an intimate knowledge of them, but things that are in good functioning order, things that you've tested out. This is not the place to bring the 1977 Enticer that starts only sometimes, because you might get up here and it's going to be 30, 40, as it has this past 3 weeks up in Canada, or my part of the Canada is, you know, 30, 40, 50 below. It's hard on stuff. You need to round up some buddies. Coming solo is not the idea. Come with another buddy that has a snow machine, has an ice shack, has an auger, has, you know, redundancy in your kit. Because while there are a lot of options for, you know, garages and places to fix you up, that doesn't happen overnight. And I think having a self-sufficient situation where you can charge batteries, jump a vehicle or a machine, you know, have another battery for your flasher, have a spare set of blades and an extension for your auger, anything that you could think of that can go wrong when you're beating around on these big bodies of water is going to. It's going to really push your gear. And there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, gear management systems. So many of these new racks and snowmobiles, they have such great options to put all the important gear on suspension. instead of putting it in the bottom of your fish hut. You know, you could be traveling half a mile or you could be traveling 25 miles there and back on a lake. And that beats the absolute heck out of your gear. And you have to have a situation where you have it stored safely, have it padded, have it covered from snow coming in, and getting back around to an investment. If you're going to invest the time to drive 8 hours or 16 hours or 20 hours to a destination, the last thing you want to ruin your enjoyment is thinking, boy, I could have spent another $100 and got the good one, or a couple $100 and got the good one, while that's the time to jump into that purchase. Not to say that you can't come with the gear that you have. It just you need to be cognizant of what you're getting into, the temperatures, the distances. A lot of things aren't open at 9, 10 o'clock at night when you get off the ice to get things fixed up, get propane, get groceries, get gas. So being prepared, having extras, having everything dialed in a system that you know can work is key. Second part of that, having a system. Systems are great. I like systems. We're in the logistic business all summer with float planes and things like that. I like things that happen easily and on time. The way to break down big water, obviously the internet, and there's a bunch of resources on social media and forums and YouTube where people that have fished these places will give you some ideas of how to do it and starting points. The long story short, when you pull up to the launch or where you access the lake, it's going to be an intimidation factor. Where do we go? Unless you have a waypoint that someone's provided you. You're going to have to cover water. You know, be ready to drill holes, set shacks up, get rods out, get flashers out very quickly and put them back. And so having a well-thought-out system of accessible rod holders, accessible auger. You know, if you had to pull your auger out of your flip-over shack every single time you wanted to move to a new place and drill holes, you're not going to be as apt to move on to that next spot. And when you're learning a new place, that next spot might be the one, and you have to believe that every time. Otherwise, if you don't have confidence in, you know, what you're doing, boy, it's hard to catch fish. That I think is the big starting point is thinking through that you might not be taking your truck out to the place that you're going to fish. How am I going to, with a truck, with a snowmobile, with a side-by-side or a four-wheeler, is my gear accessible? How am I going to keep it safe? How am I going to keep, you know, batteries warm? And how am I going to be able to access it and fish effectively? Cold weather gear is of the utmost importance, as is a cell phone. And then I want to add another thing, because right behind my house is a part of the Saskatchewan River that has no cell service. And having a way to communicate with these relatively inexpensive satellite communicators, you know, a DeLorme, a Spot, or a Zoleo, is such an invaluable way to have that insurance if something goes wrong, and just keep up with friends and family at home or among groups of you on the ice. Radios aren't the worst idea if you're fishing with a group and you don't have cell coverage. It's not ubiquitous as it might be, you know, in the U.S. and the Midwest there, and more southern Canada. So that's the first step. Get the gear, get the system. Think it through, test it on your local body of water. What works for you? What doesn't? You know, can you steer the snowmobile with all the gear piled on it? Or is it too high a center of gravity and is it tippy? Those sort of things you need to figure out before you get on a lake. The second, you need to do the fun thing. Decide where you want to go. You want to chase big walleye up in Canada. There's a pile of different destinations across Northwest Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, some in Alberta, not as much. And the research has to be the fun, you know, part of the fun part. Where do we go? How do we get there? Where can we access the lake? You know, anything that you can do and make notes, it would be a thing that I encourage people to do. have a little file, have a little notebook that you can bring on the ice with you. This person said this, this person said that, you know, here's a place where we can get off the ice if there's a pressure ridge that builds up. Don't rely on your memory and make sure that you have that backup little notebook you can put in your pack. Also another thing for that notebook, as you go to a new body of water and you start hitting waypoints, you might not remember when you come up there the next year what waypoint 243 was, but that might mean something very specific. So make sure that you have a little notebook that you can track what the waypoint mean. Is it a drop off, an inside turn on a river channel? Is it, you know, a rock pile? Things like that. That if you're cold, you're less apt to take the time to enter in, you know, a full name of rock pile one, sort of thing. But, you know, there's a lead up to it. You can jump in the truck and start heading north and see what happens. But I think the way to be successful is to, it might not happen for you this year. Maybe you choose a destination that's a little closer, test it all out, and get the right amount of research in to what the place is, what the fish might be doing. And, you know, we'll talk about Tobin and Winnipeg. I can speak to those well. They're reservoirs, or, you know, heavily influenced by big river systems. What are the fish doing in the fall? The fish are coming up rivers in fall chasing shiners. Big shiner run on Lake Winnipeg, big shiner run on Tobin, massive amounts of bait fish pull fish from all over the lakes to go up the Red River, the Winnipeg River, and the Saskatchewan River, in Tobin's case. And so if I was coming up here first ice, boy, I would be fishing adjacent the mouth of those rivers, where those fish are dropping back into the lake after the river freezes up. And then as winter progresses, I mean, there's a lot of factors that play into, you know, where the fish are going to go, where they're going to set up, currents and weather and freeze up and things like that. But the other big movement obviously comes in the spring, as rivers and creeks and streams are very important as a pre-spawn staging area. But what happens in between, boy, is year dependent and condition dependent. So I think there's a lot more fine questions to ask there, but I can certainly say anywhere there's flow, anywhere there's current, you're going to have a better chance of holding big walleye than there isn't.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept.
Like you kind of made that transition yourself. I do want to ask you some of those fine detailed questions. Not so much, you know, exactly, you know, what you're seeing going on this year, but more so just your process year in and year out. When you get into that midwinter time frame, or that, you know, the duration of the winter, when you have to find those fish, you have to find them probably day to day, maybe week to week, but certainly season to season isn't going to set up exactly the same. So what kind of process or sort of decision-making processes have you developed, you know, into your strategy when you are breaking down this water? What are the things that you're looking for, even before you actually get bit by a big walleye? I mean, what are some of those things that you're looking for that sort of are that recipe for success on the ice?
For the earlier part of the season, and we're talking in these bodies of water, you know, December, January to January 15th, January 20th, there's a lot of, you can look like a hero real easy because fish are relating to areas around river mouths, you know, right on current. there's a pretty good diurnal movement of fish shallow feeding on shallower flats, you know, sliding off a drop off or off into a river channel. So, you know, dawn and dusk, you're on a travel corridor, and mapping does a great job, and there's social mapping and different things that you can tap into there, even if it's not a fully mapped lake. But there's little spot on the spots. If you're thinking about, you know, where a corridor would be, where the fish would move up from a little bit deeper water to a flat where they're going to feed, I like to ambush. And I guess it's maybe because I've got a little lazy, that I'd rather be better at predicting fish movement than better at drilling holes. And there's a time for both, obviously, but in the earlier days of Lake Winnipeg, we thought we had to be heroes and drill, you know, as many holes as we possibly could in a day. And that was the recipe to finding fish. Well, if you can get on a travel route and just, you know, keep a consistent amount of cord out on your flasher, that's something simple as, and you can tell a 6-inch or a 1-foot difference if you have a consistent amount just under the ice, that you know how much you have out, and finding those little depressions that's going to funnel fish is hugely key. As you move to midwinter, I would say in the coldest weather, the bite becomes a little slower and a little more concentrated to dawn and dusk, and you'd be looking for a little more deep water. And instead of, if I was to get out in the afternoon and set up for fish for, you know, end of January, February, I wouldn't be setting up right on top of a flat where a channel or a drop-off came up. I'd be sitting up sort of in the bottom third. Just before it gets down to 30 feet, I try and stay above 30 feet if I can. Put that 26, 27 feet on the bottom edge of that drop-off is going to be where I concentrate, instead of, you know, 15, 17 feet where I'd be in the earlier season. I find the fish, if they do move up, don't move up all the way or as quickly. And it seems like they slow down a bit in those day-to-day movements as midwinter comes in. It's not as aggressive, not as pronounced, and you kind of have to go to a lower level in depth to find the eager biters in a bigger fish.
And, like, you know, speaking to that, the pattern and that transition of their personality, I mean, are you kind of following that up with a bit of a process with your presentations as well? I mean, are do you kind of have a sort of like a solid progression or plan as to kind of what your schedule of presentations are going to look like in terms of, you know, your bait selection, you know, your jig stroke, you know, dead sticking? I mean, what would be like just like a good solid like top three or top four kind of like 1, 2, 3, 4 progression in terms of, you know, I mean, when you're going to give a spot X amount of time, or you're going to give that spot, you know, the whole evening, the whole prime time, I mean, what are you going to throw at them?
Yeah, and that's a great point. Lake Winnipeg ingrained a love of lipless crankbaits in me. I think it's a great way to trigger fish, and I think it does do a lot of work for bigger fish. If you're around negative fish, and you're willing to sit it out, that might catch one big fish that day. But what I would do is I would use those more in the earlier and later season, and in the midwinter, go to a more compact, like a buckshot rattling spoon, or, you know, something similar to the clam rattling blade spoon. Something to that effect as it went on. My first bait goes down when I'm getting in the house. I fish by myself a lot, drop down a dead stick, jigging a minnow, and a lot of times shorten that up and just do the tail, as light a jig as I can get away with the current situation. Obviously the current would dictate if you have like an aspirin head or a flatter jig versus a round one. But then you know, or having a rattle bait to see if you can get a reaction, then I would move to a, like a, and one of those Acme hyper rattles or hyper glides, a jig and wrap shiver minnow, you know, type, type bait as my third option. And then would be the smallest, non-flutter spoon, you know, a solid like buckshot clam blade spoon, Castmaster, something like that. Small as I can get good bottom contact with a minnow head. And I still, it's kind of a, maybe it's past, you know, a little of passe, but I like that fast tack swivel that I can take the hook off, the treble hook off, and thread the minnow head on the shank of the treble and put that back on quickly. Just keeps the bait on better. You have a lot more confidence. If you get short strike, you can keep on fishing instead of pulling it away. That's kind of what I always go to. And I personally find the dead stick is great. It seems to catch more fish when fish are aggressive, but I find that, the moving baits, the jig baits are better. You know, we're not allowed to use live minnows here in Saskatchewan. If I really had to get down on a dirty cold front in February, it would be an 8-ounce clam blade spoon pink with a tail hooked live minnow and let that hang down there a couple inches off bottom. That would be my real cold weather, negative fish mood bait that we often caught them on Lake Winnipeg in February in cold fronts.
Right on, man. Right on. Swinging back around to spots and, you know, what the spots look like. And even speaking to, you know, we were talking about that daunting task, you know, that intimidation factor when you're doing your pre-planning and you've, say, never stood on the shores of Tobin Lake, right? And then you get there. And you had this total image, you know, in your head, but now you're really looking at it and you're deciding, you know, you had a cluster of spots kind of set up on this side of the lake, but you're used to fishing the whole lake wherever you're from. So you kind of had a cluster on this side of the lake. I mean, talk about some efficiencies of like how many spots should a guy try to work through in a day or whatever it is in a day of fishing and sort of the process there, like how long does a spot really need to be given when these fish are kind of in that midwinter pattern? How much are they moving? You know, what should you want to expect, you know, a spot to deliver before you just decide it's time to, you know, pack up and move to the next spot? And how far do you got to move, you know, to be making a difference in your movements?
Sure. That's an interesting question. The way that I would look at it is I would go, if I say I showed up the evening previous, okay, it's my first morning of fishing, I'm going to be out if at all possible on the water before dawn and go to what I think is going to be my number one spot. And if I was fishing Lake Winnipeg, part of it is a bit of looking at, if you're going up cold and you don't have any information, looking at where the concentration of people might be, because with a lot less feature on the bottom, you need to more follow what the currents are doing and where the groups of fish are. That's a tough thing to explain, but I'd say watching where a bunch of people are fishing with portables and not permanent shacks would give you a half decent indication of the day. But if I was fishing Tobin, I'd be fishing on the edge of a river channel somewhere, and there's enough mapping to get you close. I'd be looking for an inside turn, any irregularity that would go up to a mid-depth flat, 15, 17, 18 feet on the first step of that flat. And I'd be sitting there till on the spot till 9 o'clock. And then at that point, if you haven't got anything going, I'd do a quick round of that flat where you thought your number one spot it was, is go bang about 6-8 holes up shallow with a rattle bait up in 10, 12 feet of water. See if you can contact any fish. If that didn't work, be going to drill out some places during the midday period where fishing is slow, go, you know, go have lunch, go soak some baits, but also look at some places that were like your number one spot that you had researched, drill those out on the edge of a channel, same as Lake Winnipeg. You know, is there a place where you can see a depth change and it's going to help you see where fish are going to funnel, or is there going to be some current or a change in water clarity? If you can find those edges on Lake Winnipeg is good. But a lot of times you're waiting for that evening bite. And what you're trying to do during the midday time is learn, and you're doing reconnaissance on, is there a ditch coming into the river channel? And if you think of, you know, a coulee or a river valley, there's all these drainage ditches where runoff water comes down and cuts a little crease into the edge of the valley in a reservoir. Obviously that's a travel corridor for fish once that's flooded over. And I'd be spending my time burning through auger gas or batteries in the midday time to figure out exactly where I needed to be to try and ambush fish if they weren't going on my number one morning spot.
Right on. How much time, I mean, is it such an inefficiency to be using a camera? Or when you're learning these spots, if you have the time, say you've got a 5-6 day fishing trip, you know, it's a lot like a hunting trip. If you're trophy hunting a big elk or a big moose or whatever it is, a lot of times you can plan on, you know, say that first, you know, couple days or that first percentage of your trip, there's so much of what we're talking about, there's just going to be a lot of reconnaissance. You know, what would be some things, you know, on that note, just to kind of continue on exactly what you were just talking about, like when you're researching these spots, I mean, there's so much value because really, really ultimately, you know, the expectation isn't that you're going to catch monster fish every day. You know, somebody might be able to tell that story or some experience they had, but you know, I mean, you got to be prepared to put this work in that you're talking about here, and maybe just kind of keep going on that. Like, what would be some, you know, just some, you know, some nuances with electronics, the flashers versus, you know, some of these, you know, other units. You know, we've got all these new technologies that we talk about nowadays, including cameras and things like that. What would be kind of some nuances to when you're breaking down a very specific spot and just kind of trying to find all those little irregularities and fun little nuances?
I think you hit the nail on the head right there. Maybe a good way to look at it is you use your cameras the same way you'd use a spotting scope. You know, what's that we're looking at over there? What kind of fish is that you're seeing on your flasher? Because there's going to be, in these big walleye lakes, there's going to be ciscos and burbot and pike and sauger and smaller walleye. Oftentimes, big walleye hang with big walleye. And if they're in a certain area, you might catch more than one. That's something we certainly see as common. On Lake Winnipeg, there's a pretty good segregation of big fish from 14-inch fish. And if you're catching a bunch of 14-inch fish, that's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's making the day, but sometimes you have to move away from those fish to find it. I would really, really make sure that you're getting a consistent reading. You've got the same amount of cord out on your flasher, because if you're above this, you know, you land on a snowdrift, you're going to show up as 6 inches a foot higher. And if you have a consistent baseline, at least you can tell where the depressions may be and pay attention to where, you know, what the snow looks like and what the ice depth sort of is. Really, it's just a bit of trial and error to find something that's going on. And you have to look at it in a way that's part of the fun. That's part of the success. And I know everybody wants to go and have a great trip to Canada and catch a bunch of big walleye, and, you know, that these lakes are famous for. But it's the mindset of enjoying the hunt and being all in on building that skill, because if you're not of that mindset, great way to be successful is to hire a local guide. And if you want to embrace the whole trip and learn that lake for yourself and have waypoints that you can go and fish from, you know, year to year on this great trip, it would be a building of information. It's the same as you went out, you know, out west elk hunting. You might shoot a big bull day one of the first time you ever set foot on a mountain, but chances are it's going to take a little bit to figure out where those elk are coming from, where they're going, and you know, and all that. I really don't have a pile of experience with the live imaging, and I'm sure that's a fantastic tool to see fish at a broad, or, you know, the 360 imaging was a great way to see fish on Lake Winnipeg in a broader swath. And that's a particularly great tool for Winnipeg as you're looking for fish, less than looking for structure. But if you're fishing discrete structure on, you know, Lake of the Woods, Tobin Lake, some of the lakes in northwest Manitoba, Wekusko, and things like that, it's more of a discrete structure fishery where you've got to be around that and figure out what that point looks like, what that reef looks like. Camera's a great tool. Paying attention to your bottom hardness on a flasher or a, you know, a LCD graph is going to help you as well, finding those transition areas in a hard bottom and a softer bottom at the edge of the drop off.
Man, yeah, man, this is the stuff. I wish we had like 14 hours to talk about this. Let's see here. I wanted to kind of, you know, to help kind of people set some expectations for all this stuff we're talking about here. One thing that I like to ask when we're talking trophy fish, even if it's like a conversation about bluegills, it's a conversation about crappies, big walleyes. In your experience, in all your experience, you know, fishing, you know, big destination, you know, Canadian walleye, trophy walleye destinations, would you say, or what examples would you have to speak on talking that wintertime, that ice fishing? Is trophy walleye fishing in Canada, does it include numbers? I mean, do you gotta find spots and weed through numbers of fish to find the big ones? Or do a lot of these patterns segregate these fish enough that, you know, it's a quality over quantity deal?
I think at times of the year, early in the season, I feel like the fish are so concentrated in the two lakes we've been chatting about with current that if you're on fish, if you're on a good fish spot, you're going to catch numbers. You're going to catch some big fish in there too. I think that changes as the season wears on. And, you know, quite frankly, I would just, if you're coming up February 15th to come fishing, I'd expect to catch less fish. And, you know, for the guys I still know that guide, hopefully that doesn't hurt them because they want people to book in February too. But it's just the nature of the beast. It's that time of winter when fishing becomes more challenging, more precise. You know, instead of calling a fish from 20 feet away, maybe you can only call them from 5 feet away. Everything slows down and becomes a more concentrated effort. But certainly first ice through middle of January and then picking up in March. And as you get into the northern zones into April, third week of April, there's no reason you're not putting good numbers on the ice with a number of big ones. The benchmark for my success when I was guiding on Winnipeg, if each person got a chance to hook into a fish that you kind of knew was a good fish a day, I mean, that was the ultimate goal. Didn't happen every day by any stretch, but if you had four guys out and four guys set the hook into a 6-7 pound walleye or bigger, you know, that was the benchmark for success on a daily basis.
To be on a body of water that can deliver the type of experience to an angler that is at a point in time in their career where they are trying to level up to the highest level that they can achieve, the going to the farthest driving distance that they're willing to go before you got to book a plane ticket somewhere, you know, bringing all your own best stuff and testing your mettle to the fullest, you know, starting a tradition that could be an annual fishing trip for you and just your hardcore buddies, and going up and just really testing your mettle and the opportunity to be on a body of water like that, that just the experience is just majestic and to hoist a walleye like that, you know, and everything that goes into it, you know, just what a great beginning conversation about this whole topic of just destination trophy walleye hunting in, you know, for us Midwesterners, these faraway places, these Canadian provinces that have these big, big, you know, huge to us, certainly, bodies of water that just are you know, adventure factories and have big fish in them and give you the opportunity to work your butt off for the chance at a just a once in a lifetime experience of ice fishing. So
I think there's no better time in the history of ice fishing. The gear that is available, the information that is available to people is just like nothing else that we've seen before. If people are thinking about it, it is a phenomenal time. And I don't want to make it seem like it's, you know, all doom and gloom and there's so much work. Hey, you might drop on a 32 inch walleye in the first half hour of your trip. If you're on one of these bodies of water where this is a thing that could happen, you always have a chance when your line's in the water. So it's a great time to give it a try. The gear is out there. The knowledge is out there. And I'm just thrilled that you guys asked me to chat about this because I certainly love it. It's near and dear to my heart and get out as often as I can to chase these things.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you for this. This is a ton of fun. I love talking about these opportunities, and good luck on the ice, man. We'll be keeping track of social media to see what you're up to.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Have a good weekend.
All right. We'll talk to you.
Bye.